Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. We're going to continue our conversations about Reiki and a possible cosmology for Reiki. Some of you who haven't listened to the other shows may wonder what this has to do with Reiki, a cosmology. And for me, a cosmology is a worldview. It's something that a group of people have agreed upon that this is their worldview, and that it isn't changeable. It's just that this is what they use as a way to explain how the universe works. So in a cosmology, according to me anyway, there is usually a creation story. There is usually an ending story, like what happens when you die? What is it that we are seeking as human beings? So for some people, it's enlightenment. For other people, it's being a good person. And perhaps for us in Reiki, it's to be a whole person, to be healed and to be whole. But this is what's kind of up in the question. And in between the creation and how we got here on the planet as an individual human being, then what makes our path, or what is our life? What does our life mean as a human being? What is it that we are seeking? What are the lessons that need to be learned? What is an appropriate posture to have when you meet difficulties and difficulties on the way? So all of these things can be a part of a cosmology. Each religion and each spiritual practice has a cosmology. Each Aboriginal tribe has a cosmology. And often these days, I believe, we borrow, as individuals, we read something and then we borrow that from that particular thought process or that particular group of people. And what I'm interested in is trying to see if we as a community and as a very long-term community now can identify parts of our cosmology that are rising to the surface, so to speak. Today I have with me Robert Fustin, and he is going to talk with me about his own impressions of cosmology. And I met him because he came to a seminar that I was giving with Rick Bochner about the Takata masters and their contribution to the system of practice that I teach and to the world of Reiki. And he was very interested in this topic. And being a historian and a researcher, he has somewhat of an interesting viewpoint on cosmology, and we'll just see where this talk leads us. So, Robert, I hope I pronounced your last name right.
Yes.
Did I really?
Well, really, really close. I mean, yes.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Well, we're... Okay, we won't get into this. But anyway, Robert, good to have you.
Thank you.
And did that help you, my introduction?
Yes, it helped a little bit, because the concept of cosmology is... very new to me in terms of its maybe application to the system of Reiki. I just never thought about it
right
before. So upon hearing it, I thought, wow, I need to kind of get an overview of cosmology, which I think that really did help formulate maybe perhaps some of my own ideas. I mean, if cosmology means we have a beginning, to our shared story,
uh-huh,
then we, I think, all or most Reiki practitioners would agree that would start with the Sui, for this particular practice. So, in other words, but so that's pretty common ground. But where is it going? Or perhaps what's the goal? That's a little more murky. The precepts for me kind of are the goal, I suppose.
Well, that's interesting.
Really obtaining them, because we were given ample opportunity every day to practice the precepts.
That's true.
And multiple times. So sometimes before we even leave our front door.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, so, for me, this is just part of the practice.
Do you have a state of being that you would be in if you could realize and practice realize the precepts rather than practicing them.
Right, yes. There's absolutely a state of being that accompanies, obtaining those precepts. And that state, for me personally, is obtained when I'm actually doing treatment.
Uh-huh.
Because when I'm doing treatment, I'm in a, I don't want to say state of mind, but a state of being or a state of just a state. That everything seems fine as it is. So whereas before a treatment, I might have been stressed out about, I got all this stuff coming up.
Right.
I got this bill to pay, or, this hurts or that hurts, whatever it might be. When I start treatment on myself or I start treatment on another, all that just washes away and I have this totally different state. I experience a different state of being. So for me, that's the state of being of obtaining the precepts. And of course, we come in and out of that state. And perhaps it's like doing the hokey pokey dance. Because
does that mean?
Do you remember the hokey pokey? You put one foot in and then one foot out.
Yep.
And then you put another foot in, and then finally
you
put your arm.
You
shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey, right? So but at the end of the song, what's the goal? The goal is to put your whole self in, right?
Uh-huh.
And whole self out. But I think, I can't remember because I haven't done the hokey pokey in so long, but I think at the end you're all the way in, and maybe that's where you end. But you definitely want the whole self in, meaning you want to be in that state the whole time. And not just in and out and in and out, which is what I've experienced, over my practice. I'm in that state and then I'm out of that state and then I'm in that state and I'm out of that state. So, I think that would probably be the goal, is to be able to be in that state of, obtaining obtaining the precepts, all the time. And for some people call that state, I suppose, enlightenment. So the goal, it's almost like little, you can obtain part of that goal each day that you do your treatment.
Uh-huh.
So over time, perhaps, we change as we age naturally, with or without a Reiki practice, people change.
Right.
So there's no real, this is where my research mind comes in, there's no real way to compare. What change was the direct effect of practicing Reiki, which was not. But speaking for myself, all I can say is that I think I'm more at peace than I was in the past. I'm definitely more relaxed, more of a relaxed person, and not as intense. I have my moments. But I'm not as, easily to be riled up as I was before I started the practice.
Uh-huh.
And so for me, these positive changes, you can see cumulatively. And I think there's a big correlation to practice, because I could be having perhaps a rotten day, but if I do my practice, it just gets me in that state of being. So there's an instant shift,
uh-huh,
that I can notice.
Right.
Do the practice, there's a change.
Uh-huh.
So it would be natural to then assume that if you practice over a longer period of time, that, changes would, happen as well.
Right, right.
So, So I think that the state of obtaining the precepts perhaps could be the end of the story in this cosmology, as I think of it.
Well, that's really interesting. Yeah. Really, really interesting. Because, you know, sometimes people leap to being healed or being whole. And perhaps that's the same thing. If you were a whole, if you felt whole within yourself,
right,
you wouldn't need to worry.
Right.
And you wouldn't, obviously, right, get, in theory, get angry.
Right, right.
And so on. Yeah, yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking about what you were saying about practicing and how when you're having a bad day, you can just lay down and treat yourself and or receive a treatment mm-hmm. from someone else. And one of the things that I find in our cosmology that is really is not so outspoken in other cosmologies is that we actually, as human beings, have choice. Mm. And we have choice about our state of mind. Mm-hmm. And that state of mind can change within a few minutes.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that is significant because how many people on this earth walk around thinking that they need to, like, do 7 years of therapy or they need to get a new body or, you know, things that are pretty outrageous and right. cost a lot of money and so on. And here we are practicing this simple practice. And it just takes our own choice to practice.
Right.
And the other interesting thing within that is that there is something about practicing. So I was just thinking about when I was, like 35 years ago when I first got into this practice, I mean, the precepts just seemed like way far away and kind of impossible. So I didn't even pay any attention to them, actually. And yeah, I mean, I can confess this now. And as I went along, like 10 years later, like in the 1990s, masters that I was associated with really started to study the precepts. Like they had, several of them had like these stories, like, okay, the first one is just for today, do not worry. So if you can master not worrying, then your next one is anger, because if you don't worry, then you're apt not to get as angry. And, you know, they this whole story.
Right.
And so by the time you got to show gratitude to every living thing, you were like there.
Right.
But everything had this progression, which
right.
actually I couldn't follow. Do you have a story about the precepts?
Yeah. When I teach, I tell my students that, you know, when you break the precepts, let's say, That shouldn't be like, oh, darn it, you know, because they're not a law.
No.
It's not the Reiki law.
No. Yeah, right. Sure. Thank you. That's very good. That's very clear.
They're, like, they're ideals, right? So, the ideals. So, but when that you experience that, you can simply just, you know, that's like your bell of reminder. It's just a reminder for you to do your practice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's time. I need to do my practice. I need to do my practice.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that practice, like I said, at least for myself, I obtain this state of being that, I just feel too good to worry. And I'm not angry because I feel good. And of course it's easier to, you know, show gratitude and be
right,
kind and
right.
do your work. Honestly,
right.
I mean, all these things are so much easier when you feel very, very, a deep sense of contentment and perfection and everything.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I'm saying that's how, you know, I think the practice, the treatment leads to the obtain the precepts. And the precepts are there. So when we find ourselves out of alignment with the precepts, it's just ding, the bell, a reminder to do the practice. And so the really, you know, the same this year, how they, what's that expression? Like the coin, you know, it was like two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They mutually support each other.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, so that's how I think of them. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting. That's good. I like that mindfulness bell thing about the precepts. I've never associated with it in that way, but I get what you mean.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and I think as we practice, perhaps we'll notice, you know, our emotional state before it becomes, you know,
right,
anger. I mean, because, you know, perhaps it was like just a little grating, and then we get a little bit irritable. And if we don't address it, and we don't, you know, then it just builds and it builds. And finally, now we're mad.
Yeah.
You see, so maybe part of the practice is recognizing when we're starting to, oh, I'm starting to, you know, become out of alignment with the precept. That's just do the treatment, just
right,
preventative medicine, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly, exactly. Okay. So I know that you were really interested in the history.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me how you got into this history interest or interest in history?
Yes, yes. It's just by chance, honestly.
Uh-huh.
Because I took a first degree class back in 96, and I was given a lineage sheet. And on the lineage sheet, I found out later that it was incorrect.
Uh-huh.
Because the person under Mrs. Takata's name was not a master's student. And so at that time, I was like, well, then what is my lineage? I mean, where does my practice come from? So I kind of went in searching to find, you know, my correct lineage.
Uh-huh.
And along the way, I just kept, you know, searching and searching and searching and trying to figure it all out, you
uh-huh.
know? And of course, accompanied by that search for my first degree lineage, I heard different stories, right?
Of course.
Of course. And so, and you know, in the system of Reiki, you know, we tell stories to convey deeper meanings. So sometimes, I mean, I find those stories, they're teaching stories, some are, and they have a lot of layers to the stories too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's, I kind of stumbled into the whole research thing, not accidentally, but pretty much. If I had been given the correct lineage sheet to begin
right.
with, it might have been the end of the story.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I was very curious, like, how'd this happen?
Uh-huh.
You know? And then when I finally found, wow, there's a lot of diversity,
uh-huh.
you know? But as a person back then, hearing about Reiki, you didn't know there was any diversity because you knew nothing
right.
about the practice or this. You knew
right.
nothing.
Right.
So there's no way, because this was before, you know, the internet. You know, we had, quote, the internet, but there was no World Wide Web.
Right.
So there was no web pages with designs like, you know, there was like text-based, like bulletin board systems and stuff like
right.
that. So, you know, you didn't have quite a lot of access to that kind of thing. And so, yeah, it was quite by chance I stumbled into the research
uh-huh.
thing. And I just got sucked into it.
Right.
Yeah.
So then your kind of specialty has been the masters that Takata initiated. Is that true?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I'm interested because in some way me included, are beginning to become ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I'm just wondering what your impressions are generally of the group of masters that she initiated. I mean, can you see a pattern, or do you see how it supported the system in her, that she supported the system in her own way by the selection of people that she initiated? Or, I mean, is there anything like that that has come out for you?
I mean, it seems that, I mean, like any other person, Reiki master or not, I mean, there's such a wide variety of personalities.
Definitely.
And I think that because she chose people of different personalities. This was genius, because if you kind of always select just this one type of person,
right?
Well, all the Reiki students or potential Reiki students out there are not going to jive or resonate with that,
right?
So, but they might resonate with somebody with a very
different,
totally. And so, you know, to have such a wide variety of personalities was really smart.
Uh-huh.
Because then there would be such a more variety to choose from.
Uh-huh, right.
So you could get started in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I found over the years, especially like maybe 10 years ago or so, where many of us were still alive, that I just loved meeting, because we were all such eccentric individuals. I think my burning question when I got into Reiki was that I really wanted to work with some kind of practice that gave the individual a chance to emerge. And somehow this got to be Reiki, which was so amazing to me, because I never thought of it. I mean, it was in my own backyard, but it wasn't a choice for me because I didn't know what it was. So, interestingly enough, I'm sitting around with these people who are aging, and I'm aging myself and thinking, And I just think, wow, she's really a character. And then I go, wow, he's really a character. And I just see that we all really blossomed into our own individuality, and I found that to be really charming and also very inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
Really, yeah. Because we were so different.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't all end up being the same.
Right, right.
And one of the same things that happened, which I really loved, was that, you know, people, each of us would tell our story, or we would talk about our practice, and then whether it was said out loud or implicitly, there was always this, and this is the way I was taught by my master.
Mm-hmm.
And this, for me, joined us together in this kind of network.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really wonderful. It is really wonderful. We're not all gone yet. So, do you find... I've said this a lot, that I feel that our this circle of 22 masters, whether the masters went out and taught, whether they were visible to the outer world, so to speak, that that circle held a kind of energetic field for Reiki, for all of Reiki. And I'm just wondering... And maybe, you know, now if we think about the Usui Gakkai mm-hmm. practice in Japan, who were also very active during this time, they also were energizing the field. I don't know. It would be interesting to talk to them. But I'm wondering now that a lot of the circle is no longer living on the planet today, if you feel that there is another circle or another group of people who are coming up and taking the place of these 22 masters. Do you know what I mean?
Sort of. I sort of know what you mean, because I mean, I was only 5 when Mrs. Takata went to transition, but uh-huh. I imagine that something changed after that energetically. And when all 22 of her students are gone, I think, you know, energetically speaking, not so much as maybe an energy field, but as a root of
uh-huh.
Of our individual practice, we all can root ourselves
uh-huh.
in tracing the lineage back. Or a lot of practitioners can trace the lineage back to one of these 22 masters.
Uh-huh.
And when that's gone, because it grew exponentially masters initiating other masters, once the 22 are gone, it would be nearly impossible to have a list, so to speak, of all the masters that each of the 22 had initiated. And it gets like way too far out there. And then if you look at the next generation, it's beyond reckoning. I mean, you can't do it. And so when you have a group of individuals that have sort of really been the spread, Mrs. Takata started spreading Reiki, but with the 22, when those individuals started training other people, then it spread around the world.
Right.
I mean, it exploded.
Right.
And so after, but now it's going to be a little tricky to maybe have as much of a, I don't want to say like a bonding between, I don't want to say bonding between the lineages, but it's more or less that, maybe lineage won't become as important to some people because none of the 22 are around. And so you can't really connect to people that aren't around. And unless people are really recognized as individuals or people, really felt as people, I should say.
Uh-huh.
Because it's different reading a name on the list. I mean, that's completely different. And not knowing anything about them. And it's a completely different story to meet them.
Right.
In person, face to face, and see, and because there's definitely an energy. Because when I met you it was 2013, we met in Tubek.
Right.
It was completely different for me, you know, than just, I read things on your website, you know, this kind of thing. It is completely different, the connection in person.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps there'll be some kind of energy shift when all 22 are gone. I feel that it might, unglue some of the bonding that holds some practitioners together. And even if that's a loose bond, I feel that something's going to happen. I can't quite eloquently put it into words.
Uh-huh.
It's just
well,
a
we
feeling.
Certainly don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. It's just a feeling.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So that's interesting in and of itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never thought about it that way. Well, you know, I'm exploring this energy called succession these days because it leads to for me another line of thinking within the cosmology of okay, so I think most Reiki people agree that in this form, Mikao Usui was the person that brought it back into existence, mm-hmm. whatever that means. And then Chijiro Hayashi was one of his students. And in Japan, of course, there's a whole group of people that descended from other students that mm-hmm. he had recognized as masters. So out of this, then there is this other layer of Mrs. Takata and that generation, mm-hmm. as there is in Japan. And then now there's the next layer. And my question is, when I accepted the recognition of being my grandmother's successor, it was an individual thing from person to person, like they chose whether to recognize me or not. And sometimes the recognition was a bit contrary. Like, you know, you don't fight against somebody that you don't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because
right.
then you would be indifferent.
Right.
Right. So right. that's really interesting,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
So anyway, now I think, when I look around other spiritual practices, a lot of spiritual practices, because of the web, because of the world community mm-hmm. aspect of our society today, they're looking and going, well, what are we going to do with succession?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And is it coming that each person will be more like, the question is this practice developing along with other spiritual practices to put the hands of people's spiritual practice, to put in each individual's hands the responsibility of their own spiritual practice.
Right.
Which leads us back, of course,
that's
to the precepts.
The precepts. Right? And exactly. Reiki is first for you, right?
Right.
It's like, you have to do the practice.
Right.
You have to do, because if you don't, then you'll never know.
Right.
You'll never know where it will take you. It's like buying fitness equipment. That's not enough. It just sits there and collects dust. You'll never know. It doesn't change you.
Right.
Delete your bank account some cash. But other than that, you're the same.
Right.
But if you use it.
Right.
That's the only way.
Right.
And so it goes back to self-responsibility.
Uh-huh.
It goes back to self-responsibility. And I think a lot of the stories we tell in the Reiki community from the Takata line, come back to that.
Yes.
Come back to that. Being responsible for yourself and doing the practice, number one. Everything, if you do the practice, everything just, And that's what I really like about the practice as well, is it's that simple.
Uh-huh.
It's that simple.
So life could be easy.
Right, absolutely.
So that may be one of part of our cosmology, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
So then people are going to go, what about this person? They had their whole life crumble around mm-hmm. them, and mm-hmm. their life fell apart when they got right. into Reiki. Mm-hmm. So did that happen to you? You're a charmed person.
Right. Yeah, right. No, but people are going to have, with or without Reiki, challenges and difficulties. That's the nature of life. And I think what Reiki or the practice of Reiki allows us is a way to live more fully, because now we have, if you want to call it a tool, I suppose, we have a tool because we can do self-treatment.
Uh-huh.
So self-treatment's a tool. When we do have challenges, then we have something we could do about it. So when people take second degree, for instance,
uh-huh.
for myself, my parents live in Colorado.
Uh-huh.
So, and I live in Kentucky. So if I hear about them having some perhaps problems, physical or otherwise, I can do something. I can send a treatment,
Right.
I can do an absentee treatment. And, which is a way, really, to, quote, deal with life, right? Because we have a hardship. Oh, my parents are aging, mm-hmm. Well, here's something that can at least address that,
mm-hmm.
all in a practice
uh-huh.
that only has basically a few components.
Uh-huh.
So I think it gives you plenty of opportunity to really live life in a much different way by doing the practice and obtain the precepts. So,
right.
It completely changes things. Uh-huh. It's a game changer for me.
Right, right.
For me. Yeah.
Yeah. So, did you find your priorities of your life change?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I was a senior in college and I had a plan. I had my life planned.
Oh,
out.
Yeah. What was the plan?
Well, I was about to graduate with my bachelor's in sociology.
Uh-huh.
And I'd already written to the University of Michigan because they had the number one sociology program. And I wanted to get my PhD so
uh-huh.
I could teach at university level.
Ah.
So I really wanted to teach sociology. Well, and then I got this Reiki class, and that just totally changed my life, not only because of the practice, but because of that whole the wrong lineage given. So those two things hand in hand totally changed. Started doing the practice, and I thought, I don't know right now, I don't want to really go there. My priorities started changing. So I ended up in South Carolina, and just digging ditches on this Air Force base. Oh. And, you know, then I was like, wow, you know, I really want to do Reiki. I really want to, you know, do this full time. But I didn't know exactly how I would go about doing that, because this would have been 97 and 98. So I didn't know how I was going to do that. So I was like, well, my partner at that time was in library and information science at the University of South Carolina. So I went to a class, you know, for that she was attending, and I really liked it. I really liked what I was hearing. So I kind of just stumbled into that. And I got a graduate assistant position at the medical library. And so,
how interesting.
Yeah. So that was cool, because when I was working, when I had a free moment, I could actually see, I can go through the medical journals. Hey, is there anything on Reiki in here in the medical journals written up? And I kept wanting to do this, the Reiki, you know, full time and have it the focus point of my life. So, but I really wanted to eat too. And so I didn't think I'd be able to financially make it. So one day there's this thought just popped in my head, acupuncture. Right. And I thought, I have no idea. I don't know anything about acupuncture, but I'm in the medical library. So typed into the computer, started researching that. I thought, okay, I can go to acupuncture school. Then I'll have a license and I can practice. And therefore I'll have quote credentials. And I'd be able to practice Reiki perhaps easier this way as a full-time basis.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did. I mean, if I hadn't been involved with practicing Reiki and making that the focus of my life, I never would have went to acupuncture school. That was my point of going to acupuncture school. And so that's that's just how Reiki completely changed my life.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So... I mean, it's so amazing that you as a college senior would take this and totally turn it around and go, well, mm-hmm. this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Like, I'm used to people who are 60 saying
right.
that, right?
Right.
And I have had a few master's students who have said that, and they've been really young, and I've wondered, how is this going to work out? And it's been really fascinating. So I think that it's an interesting circuitous route that mm-hmm. Reiki takes us on in order to find our fulfillment mm-hmm. as people. So do you feel fulfilled in what you're doing now?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I get to support myself primarily through Reiki. And, I do acupuncture still. And I enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
But my passion is doing practice and treatments and teaching. I mean, that's my passion.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, for sure.
Great.
And a lot of that, you know, I mean, there's one aspect of me that's really changed, because in the first, 10, 12 years or so, I really was focused, on also research, into the history and all this. And then, that aspect of myself is really, it's dwindled. It's still there, and I kindle it once in a while, or it gets kindled,
mm-hmm.
Especially when there's an opportunity. But there's very different, priorities in myself now,
mm-hmm.
Because it was about 5 years ago. I told my wife, I said, all this stuff, all this data, if that's all it is, it's just data. And if you don't learn anything from it,
mm-hmm.
what's the point?
Right.
So I told her, I'm going to take all this stuff, and we live on a farm, and I'm going to throw it in our burn pile, which is a big bonfire. We have this fire pit. And she's like, are you crazy? I'm like, I don't need it anymore. It
Great.
Doesn't serve me. I said, I had questions about certain things and about the practice, about the practice. And I felt like I learned what the practice was, so then I could practice. And so now that I learned the practice, the end, now it's just full-time practice. And she thought I was crazy. She, short of tackling me, she convinced me. don't do that. You know, you might regret it. And I thought, all right, I'll just, what's the harm in leaving this stuff,
right,
I suppose, in the filing cabinets, you know, for a while longer. But yeah, I think, well, yeah, so that's kind of how that aspect of myself's changed as uh-huh. well. And, you know, a lot of people themselves, I mean, things just change.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of people know me as like, or think of me as, oh, he's the, you know, 22 master students at Takata researcher. And it's like, yeah, I did that. Yeah. You know, and, but now.
Would you like to be known as something a bit more,
More
like, rounded.
Yes, because I mean, that's just like one aspect. And it's like, it's the same thing with people you interact with all the time.
Uh-huh.
That some people will interact with you as a student relationship.
Right.
And they'll project what they observe in class to your whole life. I mean, they're projecting.
Right.
Because they don't know you as anything else. So some people know me as an acupuncturist.
Right.
That's my acupuncture self.
Right.
You know, and some people know me as a Reiki teacher. Some people, you know me for this, that, or the other thing. I mean, but we're different. We have so many different qualities in ourselves and different aspects
uh-huh.
that we can't say this person's that, because, and that's why spending time with people. If you spend enough time with people and especially in a wide variety of settings, that helps. I mean, I have some of my own master students come out to the farm,
uh-huh.
and they work,
uh-huh.
and they see that side of me. You know, they see that side, which is a completely unique side than other sides. But all
right.
those unique sides make up the whole.
Right.
So you get
That's
a
true.
Much better picture of
uh-huh.
somebody
yeah.
and an understanding.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I understand you're writing a book.
Right. Right. And I always say it's almost finished. I mean, I'm like, that's like my, I mean, that's like my famous line. I've been saying that for years.
Okay. So that's going to be the foreword of your book, right? I am finished.
Right. That should be it. And in theory, I would like it to be out this year. And I know
uh-huh.
people have heard me say that before.
Right.
But,
so since we practice vaguely an oral tradition,
mm-hmm.
Are you writing a book about Reiki? Are you writing a book about your research? Are you writing a book about your own thoughts that
mm-hmm.
you've had? I mean, I'm just interested.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely not like a how-to book,
uh-huh.
you know, or
right.
a manual, because, you know, you want to learn how-to, you go to class.
Uh-huh.
But it is some of my thoughts and my own, let's see here, experience.
Mm-hmm.
And there is history in there, you know, specifically on some on Asui,
uh-huh.
And some on Hayashi and Takata and her 22. But because you can kind of see the evolution, so to speak, or I guess Reiki through the time,
uh-huh.
Reiki
uh-huh.
through the times. I mean, in Asui's time, I'm of the understanding that it was mostly men.
Really?
That were practicing. It seems to be like most of his master students were men.
Uh-huh.
Well, look at Mrs. Takata's day. This is not true, right?
Right.
And so now we have, and most of my classes that I teach are primarily women as well. So I tell a little bit about history. Because the history, if we can learn from history.
Right.
That's great, because then we don't have to repeat the mistakes, and we could be very creative
right.
and making our own mistakes.
Right.
You know,
right.
which hopefully somebody would be wise enough to learn from.
Right.
But,
exactly.
Yeah. So history to me is really important because it can teach us.
Uh-huh.
It can teach us perhaps what to do or what not to do.
Right.
And whether we listen to it is completely different.
Right. Exactly.
Completely different. But at least it's available.
Right.
Available for
mm-hmm.
us to learn. It
mm-hmm.
can be a learning. And so part of my, and part of the reasons why I liked doing that research before was to hear stories, because you learn from stories. And for me, Sometimes the stories change over time from perhaps how it was originally told. And if that's true, does the meaning, the original meaning of the story, is it lost?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just changed? Or is it enhanced? I mean, that's one of those things that I've kind of discovered, that stories, when they're changed, sometimes actually lose the original meaning because maybe the person hearing it didn't catch the meaning.
Right.
Didn't catch the highlights or right. the important
well,
parts.
That's definitely the two-way street of an mm-hmm. oral tradition.
Right.
It's the telling and then the listening.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, I don't know.
So this book that you're writing.
Right. Right. we could say
what do you hope
I'm
for
writing,
it to do?
But,
what do you hope for it to do in the Reiki world?
It's funny because I hope it will make people practice more. And so like in the very beginning of my book, like when I first started out, I wrote, I'm going to make this book as short as possible, so you can get back to your practice and I can get back to mine. I don't want you sitting around reading about Reiki. I want you practicing Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And so...
That's a good thought.
Yeah, I mean, that was my intention for the book.
Right.
But, you know, I've heard people say things like, oh, books write themselves and stuff. And it's true. I mean, in my experience, that is so true, because my intention was for this book to be really small. It'd be great if it could be like 50 pages. But... You know, right now I'm at 200 pages, single-spaced.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, all right, this is like
Well, it's
so...
either a big edit job or...
Yeah, because this is...
Or a longer book.
Yeah, and some people were like, oh, make two books out of it. And I'm like, okay, so then that means I'm not almost done. So, you know, and I want it finished, that sense of finality. So.
What's in it for you when you finish it?
Besides a big sigh of relief, what's in it for me? I just think, you know, perhaps that one, a sense of completion, but I'm hoping that it will inspire people to practice and see Reiki, not just as a, you know, hands-on healing technique.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's right. just one aspect of it. That's one aspect. And if you only see that aspect, you've missed the boat.
Uh-huh.
You know, you missed it. So, I'm hoping that people perhaps will take a greater look at the precepts and practice more and see the change that happens in their life.
Uh-huh.
So I hope it's inspiring.
Uh-huh. Yeah, great. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens to the length of your book. I really love your foreword, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens. That's great. So this is another interesting process. The reason I asked you about what your intention for the book is because over the years, you know, I've gone through a lot of things about books because I was taught that this was an oral tradition, whatever that meant. And, you know, in my innocence, and I think for a lot of us in the beginning, it was like, well, there are no books written about Reiki, which actually was true up until like 1982 or something. And then when books started to be written about Reiki, it's like, well, is it still an oral tradition? And I maintained yes, but what happened is I had to go deeper into, well, what does this really mean? I mean, does it really mean about books or is it something else? So for me, I'm really into oral tradition as the main way that human beings learn life skills, and that we learn life skills, and sometimes they're kind life skills and sometimes they're not so kind. But this is the way that we learn. And so there is this really interesting part about healing and the ability to listen and hear what's really being said as a part of the healing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing. So then when you write it in a book, there's the good news, bad news things about books, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that if there's something wise that leads the reader into their own contemplation, then that will be there for many people to read and respond to, and also to be able to go back and to read it again and be re-inspired, if that's a word. Because I think about books that I've read that I've really loved and read every, like, 15 years because I need to be inspired again, right? So there's that part. The bad news for me is that as an author, I don't know if you've experienced this, but it seems like in something like Reiki, in which year after year, my perception slightly shifts because of my years of practice. And maybe my age, too. I don't know what all the factors are. But anyway, there, I feel like there is a growing understanding of what I'm practicing. So how do you express that in a book and allow that to grow?
Right. That's a very good question. And that is one of the reasons this book has taken so long.
Really?
Absolutely. I mean, you nailed it because, you know, this book's taken 5 years so far. It's not a very fast process for me because I don't have time to sit down.
Yeah.
So by the time I go back and read something I've written like so many years ago, I'm like, wow, I really have a different viewpoint or understanding now of this than I did before. So then, of course, I'll go back and change it to make the, quote, current version.
Right.
So because this book is written over such a long period of time, there's really not going to be one viewpoint of Robert in there. There's going to be multiple Robert, understandings.
Oh, right. right.
And so, and 10 years from now, I'll be different, but that will remain in print in, the same, unchanged.
Right.
So that has been one issue. And the other issue, while writing, one great thing I've come to realize is that the value of oral tradition. Because
really?
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Because when I write, it is such a one-way medium to write in. And I can write something.
Right.
And then, if somebody reads it, they might take it a totally different way.
Uh-huh.
They might not really, because if you write something, it's not clear. It's honestly not clear. And so when I do write, I try to make it so clear that there's no way of possibly misunderstanding. But when I give, I've shown some people some chapters, and I'm like, what's your opinion on this? And they say, this or the other thing. I'm like, that is totally not what I was trying to say in that paragraph or whatever. And I'm like, wow, they read this sentence and took a different meaning out of my intention.
Right.
Now, in oral tradition, there's an interaction.
Right.
So we can at least say, is this what you meant? I mean, do you mean this? And then there could be clarification.
Uh-huh.
So it's such a better way of transmission of, experiences and teaching than a book. I mean, it just, it's a terrible way. A book is a terrible way of trying to really transmit a lot of stuff. Some authors, though, however, can do it so well. I mean, so well. They write so well. But perhaps I'm misunderstanding some of what they're saying, or I'm taking away something else than they intended. But if it's a positive thing, then maybe that's okay.
Well, I was just thinking that, if you are seeking agreement when you write a book, that's an expectation that's really hard to maintain because you won't have agreement. Mm-hmm. I mean, people will have their own response and their own interpretation of what you've written.
Right.
So to be attached to being clear, this is maybe why one of the reasons that I unconsciously haven't written a book is because I feel totally misunderstood most of the time. So if I write a book, then it's really like in my face, right? But I think that as an author, there's a part of that where you really have to let that go.
Right.
And allow the book to touch people's lives in any way it does.
Right.
And then be able to be a catalyst for people. Mm. however that works. And I think that would be a very difficult situation.
Yeah, in some respects, but it's okay, like, if people have a different viewpoint, as long as they understand mine, and not they have it, you know, they're like, oh, you know, I don't agree with what he says, and I look at him like, that's not what I'm saying.
Right.
It's okay with me to disagree with me. If you know what I'm trying to, say here, that's okay, you know? Uh-huh. But I don't want you to disagree with something I really wasn't trying to say or didn't mean to say it like that. So, yeah.
Well, good luck with your book.
Thank you. Thank you.
What's the name of it?
Right now, I've been
or the
having,
working title.
Yeah, the working title. I mean, the working title for 5 years, which is not going to be the published title, was The Laughing Reiki Master. And the reason I called it that is because I found it so silly of myself to spend so much time researching. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was just a little fun title for myself to think of it like this. Like
I like it.
Yeah, and... but perhaps, you know, a more serious title, you know, I've been suggested other serious titles, and I'm such, like, usually I'm pretty goofy, you know, but I have my serious moments, so when I'm with certain groups, I'm serious, because that's my role, but when I'm at home, I'm a goofball, and so The Chronicles of Reiki has been suggested, you know, and I thought, well, you know, perhaps maybe that would be good, because if I had the Laughing Reiki Master as the title, it's funny to me, but like people would look at it and be like, who's this clown? You know, I'm not reading that, you know?
Right.
And if they don't read it, then, you know, I can't hopefully inspire people to practice. It's kind of a balancing act with the title.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, I don't have a definitive title. So.
Well, it'd be interesting. I like the Laughing Reiki Master, actually. It has a ring to it. And, you know, it brings me back to the place where I don't know about how this, you know, my kind of quest of cosmology is going to go. I don't know what's going to happen. But people say, well, now you, and then when it happens, you know, when you do this kind of research, I guess, or, you know, these things come up, will they be written down? And, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I don't feel drawn to do that anyway right now. But it seems that some masters are really called to write. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. I mean, you know, I haven't a clue. And I think that if you don't follow that calling, then there's something that you won't have done for yourself that is important.
Right.
So I can appreciate where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sounds like a difficult road.
Yeah, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciated our talk today and your story because there's a lot of it that shows up, I mean, in cosmology, like the calling to live Reiki. I mean, where does that come from? And what is it? What does it serve, or who does it serve? And the piece about oral tradition and keeping the practice of Reiki as an basically an oral tradition is a really interesting legacy to leave for another generation, and so on. So there's some really interesting points. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.